newspapers of our day, currently, I mean, they're just not going to speak of it. It's not to their financial best interest to speak of the trials and tribulations of the laborers of this country. And so here we are, and thank goodness you two and this concert on the 3rd of May, is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
At 7:30 at?
The Chico Women's Club.
Chico Women's Club, honoring the laborers of this country.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Okay. Market, okay. I'm going to take just a couple of minutes to give us all a history lesson. I'm going to tell people things that some of us may know and some may not know. Growing up, we learned almost no history about the American labor movement unless we were really lucky. Nothing in high school, nothing in most of our college classes. And I bet you that most of the people listening to this program have never heard the word Haymarket.
Haymarket?
Haymarket.
Uh-uh.
Haymarket.
I haven't.
Yeah, well, you're going to hear it in a second. My wife and I were going on vacation to Mexico 10 years or so ago, and I picked up a travel guide to Mexico and looked at the list of Mexican holidays, and it had the standard stuff, Mexico and Cinco de Mayo and Day of the Dead and so forth and so on. And on May 1st, it said the Day of the Chicago Martyrs.
And this was in Mexico?
This was in Mexico, and I thought, I bet you that not one American in 100 has ever heard of the Chicago Martyrs.
The Chicago Martyrs.
The Chicago Martyrs. So I'm going to tell you who they are.
Wow.
Back in the period after the Civil War, as all of us know, capitalism exploded in terms of a lot of it was government-subsidized growth, but tremendous growth and the development of an impoverished and largely powerless working class.
Mm-hmm.
But there also grew a response to the depredations of American capitalism. And part of what was going on was a big movement for the 8-hour day. A lot of people, a lot of working people at that point worked 60, 70 hours a week, which meant there was not much time left for family, for friends, mm-hmm. for education, for recreation, and so forth. And a lot of people, a lot of working people, thought that wasn't the way it should be. So,
and tell me again the time frame of this, years.
We're talking about the 8-hour day movement basically in the last quarter of the 19th century.
Okay.
One of the centers of activity was Chicago. And in Chicago, there was a tremendous radical labor movement. Thousands and thousands of workers, socialists and anarchists, primarily immigrants, often mm-hmm. from Germany, from the other European countries. And there was a tremendous movement for the 8-hour day, and there was, I'm going to try to make this fairly quick, there was a general strike call, a national general strike, but that was more successful in Chicago than in most places, for May 1st. The strike occurred on May 1st. It was partially successful, and plans are made to continue the struggle. On May 3rd, at the McCormick Reaper Works, a company that made agricultural equipment, there were workers on strike. There were strike breakers who tried to enter the factory. There was a confrontation with police, and six of the strikers were killed.
Hmm.
There was immediate response among the working class in Chicago calling for a demonstration on May 4th at a place called Haymarket Square.
That's where Haymarket Square.
Haymarket Square.
Chicago.
That evening of the 4th, there was a rally, several thousand people. The rally was peaceful. But as the rally ended, as the last speaker, a guy named Samuel Field, and as Fielden was finishing his comments, the police moved in. There was no reason for them to move in. The mayor had been there earlier in the evening. He'd left because nothing much was happening.
It was a peaceful demonstration.
It was a feisty demonstration. There were some inflammatory comments, mm-hmm. but there was no violence,
uh-huh.
until the police moved in.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, somebody threw a bomb. Nobody knows who threw the bomb, but there were policemen killed. There were a lot of civilians killed, and the police pretty much went berserk and began firing into the crowd. More people were killed. And as a result of this, 8 men were arrested and charged with capital murder. Nobody knows mm-hmm. who threw the bomb. We do know that none of those 8 men had anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
They were framed basically because three factors. They were immigrants, they were workers, and they were radicals. 3 strikes, and that mm-hmm. was it. So they were tried. Only one of them was a native-born American, a guy named Albert Parsons. Parsons was an interesting guy because he had been a former Confederate cavalryman,
oh, wow.
married to an African-American woman, Lucy, who was herself a formidable organizer. But the others were immigrants. Okay, the trial took place. They were all framed. There's essentially no evidence mm-hmm. connecting any of them to the bombing, mm-hmm. any of them to the murders, but they were convicted. They were convicted. Three were sentenced to lengthy prison sentences. One, a guy named Louis Ling, committed suicide in prison, not out of remorse, but because, as a militant anarchist, he wouldn't allow the state to take his life, so he rather took his own life. The other four, on November 11th, 1887, were hanged. Mm-hmm. There was a tremendous movement, international movement, that arose demanding justice for them while they were going through the trial, and then demanding that they not be hanged. That movement was unsuccessful in achieving that goal, but it laid the groundwork for an international workers' holiday, a workers' holiday that was led typically by anarchists, socialists, and communists, and is still celebrated enthusiastically by millions of workers around the country, not in this country. As I mentioned earlier, May 1st here is Loyalty Day, which is something to think about, we're saying it's a day to reflect upon the kind of changes that we need to make, the fact that even though an individual capitalist might be a nice person, the structure that sets up individual capitalists to effectively control the economy and control the political life of our country is something that needs to be transformed, and that's the message, and that's the process that we hope to expedite in this concert on May 3rd.
I appreciate that. I, as a citizen, appreciate that. It strikes me the story you told, tell me the name of that again. What do you call it?
Haymarket.
Haymarket.
Haymarket Square is the location.
Haymarket Square in Chicago.
In Chicago. Still there.
1887, did you say?
1886. The executions were in 1887.
And the executions thereof. What hit me in my brain when you were telling me this is, I have never heard this before. I did not learn this in history class of the United States
you
history.
I
did not. And that upsets me.
You must not
by
have been paying
way.
Attention, Ken.
I will say at my school, I did.
Oh, you did?
But I also grew up in Montana where the school system was occupied by some very progressive educators for a number of generations. And I've always suspected, as I've talked to people from other school systems in other states, that had a lot to do with much of the material that was in our curriculum in junior high and high school that apparently wasn't in theirs.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of those Montana towns had socialist administrations in the early part of the last century, even up into the mid part. Very, very strong radical movements. The IWW was strong throughout the copper industry and so forth.
Uh-huh. And communities in the Dakotas as well, what we called the sewer socialists, the people who brought clean water systems to communities across the country, that was basically people who were socialists who were in positions of municipal leadership and said, we've got to do something about our sewage. Latrines are not the way to keep us healthy.
The term, you two just both use the word socialists, and I feel moved to say that name again or that category again, socialists. And my impression of my opinion of socialists means opinions and political movements for the people and for the rights of human beings, social consciousness. I use the word social consciousness. And I strongly believe that's a beautiful thing. And so, and part of the reason I bring that point up is some people will hear the word socialist and think communist and rights, the opposite of rights. And it's not true. It's believing in and movements for the rights of human beings. Social consciousness. It's a beautiful thing.
So another story here in the time that we've got left, another story here that kind of connects between people who may see themselves as office workers and as environmentalists and as naturalists. They go hiking places is to know the trails that we hike on. There's an entire history, both in the United States and in Canada, of why those trails exist in the first place. And I'm going to play a short little piece or part of it from an artist by the name of Maria Dunn, who's an Albertan singer-songwriter, a wonderful, amazing person, and a story that she tells about immigrant workers. Oftentimes, the most leading edge of our labor movement has been from immigrants because they're the ones who most definitely hit straight on into what's wrong with our relationships with one another. And this is a group of Austrian immigrants who were actually invited by the Canadian government to come as immigrants to work, and then treated very badly. But this is a song about a story of their work in the Canadian Rockies, building the trails that many people in Canada, and these are similar stories to the CCC in the U.S. as well. So we'll hear a little bit from her and come back to talk some more.
Stranger, as you walk these trails of beauty, and you feel the mountain air caress your face, as you play in the shadow of the Rockies, remember who toiled in this place. Please remember who toiled in this place. They courted our labor and called us to settle the great Canadian plains. But how fickle the love of a fair young Alberta for her enemy aliens. And pity the young man in 1914 who hadn't a job or a trade, and doubly so the man from Galicia, for he was soon detained. Young stranger, as you walk these trails of beauty, and you feel the mountain air caress your face, as you play in the shadow of the Rockies, remember who toiled in this place. Please remember who toiled in this place. Our invisible hands worked in nature's cathedral for the pleasure of tourists in town. 6 days a week at slavery's wages, still we were not wanted around. At a camp that lay beneath Castle Mountain, rotten food and sodden tents. The most glorious place in the world is ugly when seen through a barbed wire fence. Young stranger, as you walk these trails of beauty, and you feel the mountain air caress your face, as you play in the shadow of the Rockies, remember who toiled in this place. Please remember who toiled in this place. Our footsteps and voices have long since faded from these pristine forest paths. Yet many's the mile and the hour we trudged here to our place of labor and back. If you listen, young stranger, the wind in the pines, or the water over the stones, you may hear the songs we sang to each other to remind us of our homes. Young stranger, as you walk these trails of beauty, and you feel the mountain air caress your face, as you play in the shadow of the Rockies, remember who toiled in this place. Please remember who toiled in this place.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we're back now. Before we shift gears, I had just one more comment that kind of relates to what we were discussing previously, and that has to do with immigrants.
And this is Tom Reed talking now.
Hey, good. You noticed.
I noticed, yeah.
Okay.
Wonderful local activist, Tom Reed. Sorry, go ahead, Tom.
That's quite all right. Very quickly, in the issue of immigrants, from a little bit of a different perspective, the largest mass lynching in American history took place in 1891 in Florida. There had been a sheriff was murdered. 11 immigrant laborers were arrested and tried and charged with the crime. But when the first four were acquitted at trial, a mob, yeah, I got the numbers wrong, there were 15 were arrested. Four were acquitted at trial, leaving 11. Those 11 were in prison when a mob broke into the prison, dragged them out and lynched them. Again, the largest mass lynching in the history of this country. The immigrant laborers who were lynched were Italians. And I think it's important that Americans realize things like that, realize that the oppression of immigrants has been a consistent theme in American history and the history of many other countries as well.
And all the people that did that and lynched those innocent people were all brought to trial and sent to prison or were paid for their murders?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Not?
Yeah, I think that we can assume that they were not. They probably all went home to their families and had a nice dinner and went about their business.
Yeah, I learned that in social studies and U.S. history, too. No, I did not.
There's usually a lot of discussions about those kinds of things in high school history classes.
Yeah, and Tom is being sarcastic now, as was I, because we don't really hear about those kind of things, which are, again, relating to middle class or working people of this country history that's important.
Point. That is not necessarily due to any shortcomings of a particular history professor, history teacher.
No.
A lot of times those folks know this stuff, but the curriculum, which is controlled
right.
by people with a certain view of the world, ordinarily is not really encouraging when it comes to trying to get that information out.
Right.
So I'd like to bring this back around to healthcare. The doctor is
healthcare. You mean because this show is called The Doctor's Inn?
and Ken, you've been very gracious in allowing us a lot of time to talk about our working lives, and you know there's a lot of things about healthcare that really figure into our working lives, whether it's the pesticides that we're exposed to, or the heavy metals that we're exposed to, or the heat in many factories. Our working lives are full of healthcare. Opportunities and maladies as well as the rest of our lives.
And the healthcare that the bulk of the working poor, let's say, can afford, healthcare that they can afford.
Yeah, and one of the things that the labor movement did gain for people, particularly in unions, is health insurance, and it is really the only kind of social health insurance that this country has had so far, and it's really struggling. It's struggling from the point of view of the businesses who are paying for insurance. It's struggling particularly in terms of the increasing amount of paying for it that the working people have to come up with on top of the meager wages that they're getting.
Exactly.
And there's a whole movement taking place now that we've talked about on the show before, if I may, Ken, and that is the idea of having a universal, national, publicly funded health insurance system rather than what we have.
Say that one more time.
Universally, publicly funded national health insurance system.
So a universal, as in all people in this country covered by insurance, having insurance, and universal and publicly funded, as in the funds for that are coming from our a body of money that we, the people, put together and for our own health care for all of us.
From taxes and from corporate taxes and from public funds, and it would be a system like Medicare, only expanded to all of the areas that Medicare currently doesn't cover, and dollar one, and from birth to your last breath.
Yes, and the funding thereof that you just described, in other words, taxation, yes, of corporations, businesses, and individuals, and costing less than the current healthcare system the way it's funded currently, because don't we all know that a big portion of the funding of our healthcare that we the working people do, when you pay your premiums or pay, and pay your copays, the reason those numbers are as high as they are that you have to pay is because of the profit for the for-profit health insurance companies. They always profit, and their profits are rising continually, always. Although the working poor, the working people all, not just the working poor, the wages and income stagnate, rise minimally or small amounts thereof, functionally small amounts. The corporate profits of insurance companies always rising, and more and more and more, not staying even keel like wages are, always rising. Corporate America, in for-profit health insurance companies. Thank you for listening. I mean, thank you for letting me say that, Paul.
Well, yes, I'm sure that listeners know my voice well enough to know that I have equal amount of venom to spread for the kind of profiteering at the expense of people's health that we have going on as a so-called system in this country. It's also massively inefficient because there's 2,000 different insurance companies across the country, give or take, and each one of them set their own rules about how all of this gets administered, which means if you're a practicing clinician in an office, you've got to track every single one of them to make sure that you write the sentence in the right order or you don't get paid.
And what he what Paul just said was the reason that my Dr. Logan's solo private practice failed. I was unable to keep up with all those changes of insurance companies, etc. I was not able to make a living. That's my story.
And if you're a patient, you're completely bewildered by the so-called choices that you have to make to decide what form of insurance is going to be most at your benefit.
No way you can know
that.
And
you're trying to predict the future about your health. Will I have a disaster this year, or will I be healthy? Or can I afford not to have that in my policy because it's a little cheaper if I don't? And not only that, but if you go to use your health insurance many times because it's so opaque, even to the best of minds, you often find out after you've already gone to get your health care that that wasn't part of your policy in the first place, so you still get stuck with the bill.
I want to just make one quick comment here, and that's I'm a patriot.
And this is Tom Reed talking now?
Yeah, about patriotism. I'm a patriot. And I've noticed that virtually every other capitalist democracy in the world manages to provide universal comprehensive health care for its people. And I'm convinced that Americans are no more incompetent than those other countries. If they can do it, we should be able to do it too.
So I want to give a little information to people, because here's an area where unions and labor have really focused in conjunction with social justice organizations and healthcare organizations and patients and parents and teachers and all kinds of people to move this whole program that we've been talking about forward. And there's a lot of activity on it. You know, people may have heard a year ago about Senate Bill 562 in California and learned more recently that it's dead, dead, dead. They keep trying to kill it. It's not dead at all, but the Speaker of the Assembly in California managed to bury it in a committee, hoping that it would die because we'd all forget about it. We haven't forgotten about it. Just this past tax day, in probably 30 different cities in California, there was a check written to the people of California for the $37 billion difference between a universal health insurance system and what we got.
Mm. So the number, the name, the SB...
California SB 562.
California SB 562.
Senate bill.
Senate Bill 562 in this our California State Legislature, and it's currently in the Assembly on hold by the Speaker of the Assembly.
Yeah, Rendon.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Anthony Rendon. Rendon.
And he's put it on hold. He's kind of duct taped it to the desk so it can't go through a committee and get to the floor to be discussed and voted on. What's his name again?
Anthony Rendon.
So we're continuing to put pressure on him and on other people in the assembly to bring this back out of committee and to continue the writing of it so that we can have a universal system, at least in the state of California. On the national level, this is also taking place. H.R. 676 in the U.S. House of Representatives now has 121 sponsors.
Great.
Co-sponsors. And this is really great. Minnesota Representative Keith Ellison is now the lead sponsor for that. And Bernie Sanders has introduced a similar bill, has some strengthening to be done to it, but certainly well on the way, called Senate Bill or SB 1804. And these are both federal bills that are out there. Work for us to grab onto.
Do those numbers again, the House bill and the Senate bill for single-payer health care. What the numbers again?
In the House, it's H.R. 676.
H.R. 676.
House Resolution 676, mm-hmm. And then Senate Bill 1804.
1804, Senate Bill 1804.
And Ken, I want to thank you again for having us on. I know we don't have much time left
here.
And we want to be able to go out with a song that I think conveys our feelings about where we are at this moment in time and how we plan to move forward.
And is the title of our concert.
So thank you. So let's listen to that song spend some time listening to that song, Paul, on our way between programs. The Beatle Nation is up next. Stay tuned for that. I want you to know about that the Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Chico News and Review, providing Northern California with news, commentary, and entertainment. The Chico News and Review is available for free every Thursday at over 600 locations throughout Butte, Glynn, and Tehama counties, and at newsandreview.com on the internet. And by Sierra Nevada, presenting 5 Point Adventure Film Festival, April 28th, in the Sierra Nevada Big Room. This exclusive debut showing of their inspiring outdoor films will inspire you to get outside and enjoy the world around you in exhilarating new ways. Tickets proceeds to benefit the Pale Ales for Trails program in support of the National Trails System. Further information can be obtained at sierranevada.com. Stay tuned for Beatle Nation. Thank you.
Here we go. City and country together.
We shall not be yes. City and country together. We shall not be what just like a tree. We stand by the water. We shall not be moved.
We shall not
be.
We shall not be moved.
to be mine. You're gonna say you love me too.
If I fell in love with you, would you promise to be true and help me understand? 'Cause I've been in love before and I found that love was more than just holding hands. If I give my heart to you, I must be sure from the very start that you would love me more than her. If I trust in you, oh please don't run and hide. If I love you too, oh please don't hurt my pride like her. 'Cause I couldn't stand the pain, and I would be sad.